Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. Columbia Records, presenting the new self-titled album from John Mellencamp, featuring Your Life Is Now, available in stores. And Princeton University Press, publishers of The Shape of the River by William G. Bowen and Derek Bach, an examination of race-sensitive college admissions policies and their long-term consequences. In bookstores or on the web, pup.princeton.edu.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We have something special for you, an onstage performance and interview with Tracy Nelson, a powerful singer who became famous in the late 60s as the lead singer of the roots music group Mother Earth. Over the past few years, Tracy Nelson has recorded a series of rhythm and blues albums on Rounder Records. Now she's featured with R&B great Irma Thomas and pianist and singer Marsha Ball on the CD Sing It. They trade lead vocals and sing backups for each other. Before we meet Tracy Nelson, let's hear a track from Sing It.
We start a fire. Who knows what for? Who knows who's winning? And who's keeping score?
Our Tracy Nelson interview and performance was recorded in Austin, Texas, at a benefit for public station KUT. She was accompanied by Marsha Ball at the piano. We'll feature Marsha Ball's concert and interview sometime soon. Tracy Nelson grew up in Wisconsin and loved rhythm and blues. She had trouble finding like-minded musicians when she moved to San Francisco in the 60s.
Because that was the psychedelic era. And nobody, you know, they'd say, what kind of music do you like? And I'd say, well, I kind of like blues. They'd say, oh, go hear this blues band at the Matrix. They're really great. And it'd be the Grateful Dead. And when I was in Wisconsin, I went every weekend to Chicago and heard Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. And you know, that's what I meant when I said blues and wasn't really what they were doing out there. And R&B was just out of the question. It was just nobody doing R&B.
Now, you had already recorded an album, I think, by the time you got to San Francisco. You had an album in 1965.
Yeah.
And what? How did you, I think you were still in college, how did you manage to get a record so young?
Well, it was like everything else that's ever happened in my career. I don't know, it was a fluke. I was at a party, met a guy, liked my singing, and said, let's, you know, we can do a record.
Who'd you mean?
Sam Charters.
Well, he's not just a guy, I mean, he's... I mean, Sam Charters has produced a zillion blues records and written books about the blues and, you know, traveled the South rediscovering blues musicians.
It really had to do... I was at that time doing some kind of folky stuff with Johnny Kalb, who was Danny Kalb's brother, who was in the original Blues Project. And they came through town. Danny was doing a show, and then we went to a party afterwards and sat around and sang. And Sam seemed to think that I could do something, so... And that was a very acoustic, kind of traditional blues thing.
How did you find the musicians in the band that you formed, Mother Earth?
Well, Doug's going to kill me for this. He's going to kill me. But, I mean, this is the absolute truth. We looked everywhere for musicians. And the man who was kind of acting as my manager then, was my manager for years, Travis Rivers, came to us one day and he said, it was me and another singer and a keyboard player, so I found a great R&B section writer. They're great. They're from South Texas. They're you know, just what you want. And I said, well, how'd you find these guys? He said, well, it's Doug Somm's band. And I said, well, isn't Doug going to be kind of nerked off if we just take his whole rhythm section? And Travis said, screw him, he just ran off with my wife. That's the absolute truth.
So what has Doug Solomon's reaction since then been?
He asked me not to tell that story.
I guess we'll leave it there.
Yeah. Oh, and so, we definitely got the better end of that deal. There's no deal.
The person who you mentioned, Travis, who was your manager, uh-huh. Now, he was also, I believe, the person who, you know, discovered Janis Joplin.
Well, he didn't really discover her, but they were kind of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And
friends in the 60s term?
Yeah. And he brought her up to San Francisco from Texas originally, but that didn't last long.
So was there ever the suggestion that you were being marketed as, like, the next Janis Joplin?
Always. It worked in my favor to a large degree because I was nobody. I mean, I had just put through some people together, and I was doing a kind of music that nobody was really doing out there. And thanks to Bill Graham, we actually got some gigs, but still, we'd play, and people would say, oh, that's okay, but you're no Janis. But the record companies were, all of them, looking for another Janis, the next Janis, their Janis. And for Mercury, who gave me my first contract, very quickly, I mean, within a year or so after I moved out there, I had a record contract, which was absurd. And that was their hope, and I think they were bitterly disappointed.
Well, you're so different then. I mean, she was really such a kind of shouter singer, whereas you're a singer. I mean, not, which isn't to put Janis Joplin down in any way, but I mean,
it's apples and oranges for sure.
Yeah,
and I never heard any similarities at all. But I understand why they thought I could be that because I'm loud. So.
Well, did that also give you the sense that you were supposed to be this kind of like sexual figure of fantasy in the way that she was, that you were supposed to have this like erotic relationship with the audience the way she did? Because she really did. I mean, that was her thing, having this like erotic relationship with the audience. Yeah. And that's a lot of like, oh, you're the next Janis, so you got to get on stage and do that too?
You know, I didn't think about that much at the time.
That's,
and
just
glad
as well,
I didn't.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that never crossed my mind. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure that was part of the expectation, but again, people were bitterly disappointed.
The band was named Mother Earth, and it was named after a Memphis Slim song that was a song that the band did. Let me ask you to do a few bars of the song.
Yeah, okay. Well, you can hi-hat me all the time, and you may never come my way. Mother Earth is waiting for you. There's a debt you've got to pay. I don't care how rich you are. I don't care what you're worth. Got to go back to Mother.
This song is, of course, about how we all end up dead and in the ground, but did people somehow interpret that as Tracy Nelson is an Earth Mother?
Yeah. And it really, you know, this is what, when you start a band, you work up shuffles and slow blues because it doesn't take any rehearsal at all. And you want to get out there and do a gig as quick as you can, so you don't want to waste a lot of time rehearsing. So you just work together a blues set. And so this is one of the first things we pulled in, and one of the guys in the band, and I'm sure they came to regret it, said, oh, this would be a great, you know, band name. Immediately it drew attention to me being the only woman in the group, and just detracted from them. And there was another singer, Paul St. John, who was a brilliant, brilliant writer and a wonderful singer. And, you know, he got kind of eclipsed with that. And people started thinking I was like Mother Earth. And, you know, that's a heavy burden. And one I never asked for. And when people would come to my house and think I had a commune, and when I moved to Tennessee and lived on a farm, I would get up in the morning, there'd be people in my living room saying, oh, we're here to crash in your commune. And it did carry a lot of baggage with it.
We'll return to our onstage performance and interview with Tracy Nelson after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to singer Tracy Nelson, recorded on stage in Austin, Texas.
You left San Francisco for Nashville and sometime in the 70s.
69.
69, okay. Yeah. And so did that change your music? Did that lead you more toward country music?
I don't think so. I'd always sort of liked a little bit of country music. It was confusing. It probably put a kind of a stop to my career at
Why?
That point. Because I moved to Nashville. My records said, you know, recorded in Nashville. They went in the country bins. People, would, if they even bought them, would say, well, she don't sound country. And, you know, it just confused people. And it about the time we had finally gotten enough attention to, you know, what I was doing and re-educated people, then I did that damn duet with Willie Nelson, with that damn Willie Nelson, which is probably the single most successful thing I've ever done in my life. And I mean, it was a great song, but we just did it as a whim, and it was huge on the country charts. So that just confused it all over again. And from that point on, I've been, you know, you don't hear me describe without country being in there anywhere. Now, sometimes they say country blues, and, you know, that's Charlie Patton. You know, that's not me, but it did confuse the issue pretty much.
But you have recorded a bunch of country songs.
Oh, yeah, and right after I moved to Nashville, I did an entire album of country tunes, so that probably pushed it right along, too.
Well, you know,
go figure.
Just to show off that part of your repertoire, maybe Marcia can come back to the piano and accompany you in maybe a few bars of a country song that you like.
Yeah. Actually, a song I used to do in my folk act was that was I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry, and then we cut it on that. You hear that lonesome whippoorwill? He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is moaning low. I'm so that line, have you ever heard a robin sob? I mean, God, what a line.
You dropped out of music for a while, I believe.
No.
No?
I just quit recording so nobody knew I was playing music.
Why did you quit
recording? My profile dropped.
Was it your choice, or was it the music industry's choice?
No, it was the music industry's choice. It was the 80s, and, you know, I couldn't get right with the 80s, and nobody wanted to record me, so I just went out and did gigs when I absolutely had to, and stayed home the rest of the time.
I want to recommend the records, the series of records that you've made on Rounder.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting types of songs on there, too. Yeah.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, God bless Rounder. I mean, you know, I really got drugged back into it, kind of kicking and screaming. I mean, the producer that I did the first two records with, Tommy Goldsmith, just went to Rounder, and everyone kind of said, okay, yeah, you better make a record. And I was really still not kind of thinking, oh, I can't do what I want, so I don't want to do it. But they let you do what you want. So,
has living in Nashville put you in touch with different songwriters and...
There are great songs. I mean, we mentioned one of them earlier, Gary Nicholson. There are great songwriters in Nashville. And the very successful ones write mostly for the country singers, but, you know, when they really write what they want to, they write these great R&B tunes, and Gary's one of them. I mean, you know, when he's just knocking them off, he and Delbert get together and just knock off these ridiculously wonderful tunes. Mm. And another person is Mike Reed. What does anybody know what position Mike Reed played for the Bengals? I think it was played. Oh, I like to say tight end, but I guess that's not right. So, you know, he's a defensive tackle, and he writes these, it's snotty of me to sound surprised at that, but he writes these exquisite tunes. He wrote I Can't Make You Love Me If You Don't for Bonnie, and I mean, I don't know if he wrote it for Bonnie, but she recorded it, and we did a song of his on the new album. It's called In Tears, and it was also written by co-written by Rory Burke, who's another just magnificent writer down there.
Tracy Nelson recorded on stage in Austin, Texas, at a benefit for station KUT. Her latest album, Sing It, on Rounder Records, also features Irma Thomas and Marsha Ball, who accompanied Nelson at our concert. From the CD, here's the song Tracy Nelson was just talking about, In Tears. Tracy Nelson from the CD Sing It on Rounder Records. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our onstage interview and concert with Tracy Nelson. She first became known in the late 60s as the lead singer of Mother Earth. On her final song, she'll accompany herself at the piano. I'd like to ask you to do another song from the Mother Earth era. And this is a song you wrote. It's a great song, and you sing it so well. And it's called Down So Low. And I know you've sung this a lot over the years, but I'd love to hear you sing it.
Well, I appreciate that. I don't usually do it. I mean, I usually have like a whole band with me to do it, and that's easier for me.
When you that was all around.
it's burned out a hole. Where my love used to be. But it's not losing you, no, no, that's got me down so. I just can't find you know I love you, but that wasn't enough. We both fell apart when things got too rough. And I've learned
a nice big drum crash.
What was going through your life when you wrote that song?
That's what I call one of my bad boyfriend songs. I mean, you know, what the hell do you think? I was in love with a guitar player who became quite famous, and he broke my heart, and I wrote this song, and it's the best thing he ever did. Musically, anyway.
Tracy Nelson recorded on stage in Austin, Texas, at a benefit for station KUT.